Hello, everyone. Welcome to CPE's quarterly podcast series with Crew Network. I am Laura Kaluger, Senior Editor with CPE. Today, I have the honor of talking to the organization's 2022 president-elect, who will be the first representative from Virginia to lead Crew Network when she serves as president next year. My guest is a shareholder at Williams Mullen, a full-service law firm, and her practice focuses on commercial and multifamily real estate and finance. Welcome, Alyssa Carducci-Dengler. I'm glad you were able to join me.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to speak with you today.
So first, let's help our listeners get to know you a bit better. Why did you go to law school? What's the story behind this choice?
Well, Laura, I was born in the United States, but really grew up crisscrossing the United States and Europe. I come from a military family, and so really spent time in the United States and in Germany going back and forth, and predominantly grew up in Texas and in Germany. I did not have any lawyers in my family, and I didn't have anybody in commercial real estate in my family. But yet, when I was six, I was determined that I was going to be a lawyer, despite the fact that I knew absolutely nothing about it.
That's an interesting choice at six years old.
I think it's because my family thought I liked to talk a lot. And they said, okay, yeah, that she helps. Likes to talk a lot. Exactly.
You could have been a journalist or a lawyer. So you chose the lawyer.
Exactly. And I went to undergraduate in Boston and really knew that even though I wanted to go to law school, it was important for me to have a background in business. And so I was at the School of Management at Boston College, really enjoyed the experience of learning accounting, finance, marketing, operations, and delving into the business world, and then went immediately to law school at Tulane, and then started practicing in Atlanta. And took the bar in Georgia, and then took another bar here in Virginia, and then have been here practicing at a big law firm for about the past 10 years.
Wow, such an interesting journey.
It's been full of interesting diversions and other different journeys that I didn't see coming. For instance, my third year of law school, I was in New Orleans and Hurricane Katrina hit. Mm-hmm. Which really helped shape my interest in affordable housing and why it was so important, because I saw the crisis and the need for it. Mm-hmm. And it really helped change the trajectory of my career. And I could not be more grateful or thankful to be within the multifamily affordable space as well.
And we'll talk about that a bit later. Today, you are a partner in Williams Mullen's real estate and finance practice and chair of the tax credit practice. What's so fascinating about this industry, the real estate industry? Why did you choose to specialize in real estate and finance?
Well, again, I didn't have any family members at all that were in real estate. So I was really convinced that lawyers were either deal lawyers that never saw a courtroom or lawyers that were in a courtroom, and really didn't understand until I went to law school the world and all the different opportunities within law. And I really thought I was going to be an antitrust lawyer or perhaps even a sports lawyer. I went to Tulane, which has a really strong maritime focus and also sports law. I thought it would be really an incredible experience to do deal law on that end. Mm-hmm. But in 2005, I interned for a very large law firm in Atlanta. And I was lucky enough to be on the top floor surrounded by a lot of amazing commercial real estate women and had the opportunity to learn a little bit about commercial real estate. And in fact, they took me to a Crew event, which is what really helped spark a lot of interest in it. But at the time, it was 2005, and the amount of business and construction that was happening in Atlanta was just absolutely incredible. And I could look around and see exactly what was happening in the city without having been a native of Atlanta. And I noticed that so many people, no matter where they had come from, if they were in commercial real estate, they generally had a much better sense of understanding the community. They could figure out who the developers were, the lenders, and it really helped provide much greater sense of community and place. Mm-hmm. And for me, having grown up all over, I'd never really had a place that felt like home to me, but I realized this is an amazing opportunity to get to know your community on a much more micro level and to be really heavily involved. And so I decided to get involved in commercial real estate and development, accepted an offer to join that firm, and spent the first couple of years of my career focusing predominantly on retail real estate, which was absolutely incredible before the downturn. Really mm-hmm. had an opportunity to work for some of the largest and most prolific developers in the country at that time.
And now you represent clients nationwide on a variety of acquisition, disposition, financing, and leasing matters in the multifamily, hotel, industrial, office sectors. How does your agenda look like? It looks like you're very busy. How do you manage to stay on top of things on a very busy day?
I think we're all very busy now. And I think certainly the way that we have all had to live our lives the past 2.5 years is a testament to the importance of keeping a calendar and being prolific on Zoom, Teams, and all the other different channels. But for me, I have my Outlook calendar that I really spend a lot of time on, and I have an amazing, amazing team. My team and I work together to make sure that we're meeting the needs of our clients. Everyone is very busy right now, and clients are really asking a lot of their teams because they need to get their projects done. And so being able to be responsive to our clients and to provide whatever they need as efficiently as possible is very important. And so for us, having people that are able to serve our clients and to provide that higher level of service is very important to us. Mm-hmm. And for us, it's being responsive. In fact, our firm, we have a guideline where we even try to respond to emails within 4 hours, just so our clients know that they're being heard, even if it's not substantive, just so everyone understands that, you know, we're here for them and we're happy to assist in any way that we can. So I generally try to abide by that time frame and also just to be very responsive to my clients, even if it's after hours or we need to talk over the weekend. And then personally, I'm very lucky that I have a very supportive husband because I have a very busy 8.5-year-old and he really helps support our family and keep everything running on the home front as well.
And that's very important. Life-work balance nowadays. It's been very important to find the right balance between these two, right?
Absolutely. And that's one of the big transitions that I've seen that's occurred within law since COVID came into the picture, that now there are more opportunities for alternative structures as far as having associates, partners, having your team work together so that we are able to provide that flexibility so that everyone can tend to whatever they need to while still keeping up with a very busy client load.
And your practice also includes navigating clients through the unique challenges of solar and wind technologies. How much progress has been made in this industry? It is clear to everyone that this is the future, but are things advancing as fast as they should be? Is the legislation keeping pace?
It's incredible. Being a part of the alternative energy sector within commercial real estate has been one of the highlights of my career. I started working in the solar space about 10 years ago. I was assisting our larger industrial clients with rooftop solar projects. And really within Virginia and then within the rest of the United States, the blossoming of the solar industry has been absolutely incredible. For me, what I've seen is that the structures have become much more complex. Leases originally were much shorter and didn't have as much depth to them because we didn't yet know what was going to happen. Now what we've seen is that there's been more regulations on just about every level and also just a greater expansion of different parties' roles during a solar transaction. We've also seen the utilities have entered the space as well. And we've also seen other uses for solar arise, such as having the goats tend to the areas around it. Or other things that are certainly not traditional, you know, having clauses in the leases now about having pollinators access the property or putting them on the property is certainly not something we contemplated at the time, but has really made it a much more interesting space. And, you know, as a result of that, we've seen that some localities in some states are more friendly to solar and others are not as developed yet. And so within the regulations and the legislation, we are seeing that there is a movement to standardize some aspects of it. For instance, decommissioning the site, what happens after the solar project is no longer useful, or how you return the project back to an agricultural use. So those aspects have been changing. And I would say that, you know, on a weekly basis, we are seeing different things happen. On a monthly basis, I'm probably touching somewhere between 25 to 30 solar leases across different solar developers. So it's really an opportunity to see what's happening in the industry and to be a part of something that's so crucial right now in the middle of so many energy crises.
You also previously mentioned that you were active in the affordable housing industry and demand for affordable housing options is sky high, but developing such communities is challenging in today's volatile financial environment. How are your clients tackling this rising inflation, and what do you advise them?
Yeah, exactly. We really have a global shortage of affordable housing, and it impacts absolutely everyone. What we are seeing for our developers is that they need to bridge the amount of equity that they bring to the table if we have such high interest rates. And so the only way to do that is to have other programs or to have other tools in their toolbox, such as low-income housing tax credits, to have bonds, to have other alternative methods of accomplishing the project. And one of the most amazing things is that multifamily is really an area that we do not see a slowdown. So in 2008, 2009, when my practice really slowed down as it related to retail or office, I saw multifamily get even larger. And so I'm not seeing a slowdown at all in multifamily, but what I am seeing is that there's more of a need to use those tools such as low-income housing tax credits. And some states offer state low-income housing tax credits as well, and also bonds. And we're seeing now that in a lot of the states in which I practice, there is no more bond allocation left and there are no more bonds left. And this is something that's really happened over the course of the past year or so that we have not seen in a very long time. And so the unavailability of those bonds will impact these projects. But at the same time, we also know that this is such a need that most people are going to work together to try to figure out how to best get the resources available to the developers so that they're able to create these communities. Because a lot of times people, when they think about affordable housing, don't realize that you could see many affordable housing projects that look identical to market rate housing. And it's very important to provide that high quality environment to residents because it helps enable them to have a better opportunity and to also be able to afford opportunities to children, which are often what we see as many residents of these communities.
Right. The office sector, on the other side, is still plagued by uncertainty. Could you please tell us how your commercial clients are navigating the economic environment today? Are they considering maybe shifting to co-working spaces or shorter-term leases?
So I'm not seeing as much need right now for the co-working or shorter-term leases in 2022 as I was in 2020 or 2021, when certainly no one knew what was happening next. And I felt retail leasing just halted and everything was just at a snail's pace. I've certainly seen that people are more willing now to agree to regular term leases and to have those terms that were more commercial prior to March of 2020. But the clauses that were previously considered boilerplate are no longer considered boilerplate. So what we're seeing is people are negotiating different aspects of the deal in case there is another epidemic and in case there's anything that would require a shutdown of their business. In the industrial space, I've noticed the most amount of change because industrial has just been blossoming. I've been extremely busy. And here in Virginia, we're right on the Port of Virginia, which is one of the largest ports on the East Coast. And the amount of new development and new projects that we've been working on is just really impressive. And my clients that are developers have really almost struggled to keep pace with the demand. So it's been really interesting to watch industrial really take off as a result of the past few years. And the demand for that space certainly is rivaling very high rents and terms that we have not seen in a while.
Will industrial growth stop anytime soon?
We don't see it stopping anytime soon at this juncture. It appears based on all the supply chain issues and then also on different consumer spending habits and what has changed now in the market, that there is a need to have that space and to also have it somewhere that's going to make it efficient to move goods. So for us here, we know we have some of the larger companies in the country because they're able to access different parts of the United States by rail, by air, by car, or also by boat. And so having different opportunities available to end users to have a warehouse so near all those different modes of transportation really helps drive down the costs of their goods, the costs of their transportation, and then really pass that on to the consumer. So it's important for us to have the space available to those tenants that need it and to access all those different pathways.
Let's focus a bit on a secondary aspect of the commercial real estate industry. This industry and also law firms in general are still very much male dominated, but the past couple of decades brought some positive changes, I'd say. From a diversity standpoint, how have things evolved since you first got in touch with the real estate industry?
Well, I've certainly seen progress for women since I started in commercial real estate in 2006, but it has not been enough and it has not come quickly enough. Crew Network's benchmark study measures progress for women and other underrepresented groups in the industry every 5 years. And very little, unfortunately, has changed in terms of representation in the industry, pay parity, and diversity in leadership roles in the last 15 years. The Crew Network industry leading research focuses on providing the commercial real estate leaders with the data and the action items, though, to create these more diverse, equitable workforces. And I really encourage everyone to read it and leverage them within their company. But we know that this research reinforces that diversity is a business advantage. We at Crew Network know this. We've been advocating for equity and inclusion for all people in CRE for more than 31 years. But now DEI has come to the forefront in the last few years. Nearly 5 years ago, our Crew Board of Directors made DEI a strategic priority in our strategic plan. And this plan and our goals guide the industry-leading DEI efforts. And if they haven't already, industry leaders really need to prioritize DEI as a business imperative. They take committed action now to make this a critical investment in the future of our industry.
And when you look back, what is the most satisfying thing for you as a female professional working in a male-dominated sector?
Well, Crew really has changed my career and really influenced me in ways that I cannot even begin to express. But I will tell you that having women and having mentors that were women in commercial real estate support me and encourage me to go into commercial real estate really changed the trajectory of my career. The progress that we have made, certainly we've seen more equity partners, more women in leadership, but what it really does is help provide that critical link between students and entering workforce women that don't know what commercial real estate is. And Crew really helps guide that. We have programs like UCrew and Crew Careers that help expose women to commercial real estate as a career path and also show them the diversity of the different fields within commercial real estate that they could touch. For me, I was lucky enough to have female partners that really showed me there are many women in commercial real estate and they are the leaders in the room. The first time I ever walked into a Crew event, it was a giant event in Atlanta. There were tons of women there. They were really the ones getting the deals done. And I just thought, you know, look at all these incredible women. I want to join them. I want to be part of them. And so to see the growth of Crew and to see the growth in women and how many more women are in the commercial real estate field and in leadership positions is really very gratifying, but there's still so much more work to be done.
And when you'll serve as president next year, you will be the first representative from Virginia to lead Crew Network. How does that make you feel? Do you feel any kind of pressure?
It's an enormous honor, and I am so excited to be of service to Crew Network. It's been an incredible pleasure to be on the board for the past 2 years and to be the president-elect this year. And I would not be where I am without Crew. I was an associate working at a law firm and was going to my Crew Coastal Virginia meetings, doing work on the community service and doing work also on special events, which was very funny because most lawyers don't plan special events, but went outside my comfort zone a little bit to help serve on that committee and really just showed up every day and did what I said I was going to do on that committee. And I was very lucky that a senior broker came to me and said, Alyssa, you've been such a good committee member. I'm going to throw you this deal and it's a little deal. It's not going to turn into anything big, but you know, my other attorney that I usually send things to is busy. So here, have this deal. And that deal was not a little deal. It blossomed into a gigantic partnership with that client that spanned many years and really provided the springboard for me to gain other clients and to get the confidence that I was able to build my book of business as a senior associate. And I would not have had that opportunity if it wasn't for Crew. And as a result of Crew having that impact on me, I now give and get business through CrewBiz and the other portions of the Crew Network that really help share the power of the network and how much you can help each other just by picking up the phone or reaching through the Crew Network directory and seeing who the different members are. And that really helps raise all women, and it really helps influence the development of other people's careers as well. So for me, Crew has just been an incredible gift to me, and I'm very fortunate to have the opportunity to provide service then back to Crew Network in this way.
And what are your plans for the organization? Are there any initiatives that you're already working on? Can you reveal some of your plans as Crew Network 2023 president?
Well, later this year, our 2023 board will undergo the strategic planning process. Mm-hmm. That will guide our work for the next 3 years. So we'll have our strategic priorities outlined after that process. However, some of our focus areas will remain member engagement. Specifically, you know, as we transition back to in-person networking and events, we're intentionally working to re-engage members. The true value of Crew membership becomes very apparent when we are together and in person, finding all these commonalities and opportunities for business, such at convention or at leadership summits. And we also really want to grow our membership globally. Our mm-hmm. global expansion is accelerating and creating new opportunities for members. This year, we launched Crew France, and we're going to soon launch Crew Mexico City. Our efforts must continue to expand the scope to enable women all over the globe to have this opportunity to connect, to conduct business with each other, and to learn. DEI is also going to remain a priority and focus area for us, specifically belonging and inclusion. Mm-hmm. Crew is the industry leader in this space, and we must continue to embrace the commitment and to create a belonging culture for all, period. And then as part of that, we have our CRE Pledge for Action. This pledge already has more than 105 companies that have signed on to it, and it requires game-changing actions needed to fulfill the mission and to hold industry leaders accountable to fulfill the mission and to serve other underrepresented minorities in commercial real estate. It's our goal to have every CEO in the commercial real estate industry sign their name to this commitment. And another area of focus for us will be to inculcate a deeper understanding about the responsibilities and expectations of leadership and Crew, as well as to assist leaders to grow their leadership skills. And that really assists everyone personally on a chapter level and then the whole network.
Well, Alyssa, good luck with all these projects, and thank you again for taking the time to be part of this podcast series.
Thank you, Laura.
I'm looking forward to our next audio meeting. Until then, make sure you check our website for the latest news, trends, and executive interviews.